let's get started. Quick heads up, we're either going to do 1 or 2 hours today based on calls and questions. And I'll tell you right now, it's really light. Mondays normally are. If you want to get in, now is your chance. If you have a question, a comment, a topic, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. I guarantee we'll get to you. In fact, it's looking like right now we might only be doing 1 hour. We'll see. Sometimes the questions pick up as we go. But if you want to get through, now is your chance. So we'll go ahead and get started, and I'll keep you updated on where we are as far as calls and questions. But right now, wide open. If you want to jump in, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. I promise we'll get to you.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. Oh, hold on. We had a misfire there. We're going to restart.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, the list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll talk about it. We're going to get to the calls in just a minute. I've been reading a lot lately about where the industry is going. And rates are kind of in the tank again. We were starting to see some uptick in rates. Things were looking a little better. And now they're starting to drop off again. There's some predictions that 2017 rates might get better. But there doesn't seem to be much indication of that right now. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But this is kind of what I talk about all the time. One of the criticisms I get a lot is that I spend more time talking about decreasing expenses and not enough time on increasing revenue. And I do spend a lot more time on decreasing expenses because I've been in business my whole life, lots of different businesses. And in every business I've been in every business I've studied, you always have more control over your expenses than you do over your revenue. It's also easier to lower expenses than it is to increase revenue. And I've never said you shouldn't work on increasing revenue. You absolutely should. But you should work on expenses first. You should work on lowering expenses, and if you have enough time, and you can work on both. But this is one of those cases where you can't control the fact that rates are going down. Now, you might become a better negotiator. That would be a good thing. You might learn more about rates and lanes, so even in a bad time, you're able to find better rates. Those are all good things. But when rates go down, they tend to go down across the board, and there's not much you're going to be able to do. So your revenue will go down no matter how good you are at this, and you have to be able to sustain the business with less revenue. The one way to do that is always keep your expenses as low as possible. And if you do that, you will always be competitive. So imagine if times get really tight, rates go down, freight gets slow, there's just not as much work. The person who hasn't done any work on lowering their expenses is toast. They will be the first one to drop off the radar and be out of business. The person who's done the most work on the expense side and has their expenses as low as possible will be the last one standing. No matter what happens to rates, somebody is going to move the freight and somebody is going to make money doing it. That somebody is going to be the one who has worked hardest on lowering expenses. So we do spend more time in business controlling expenses than we do working on revenue. Now, there's an exception to that. And that is when things are really booming, when there's just lots of work to get done and rates are good, sometimes you just take advantage of that. You just jump in, make money when you can. And I've been in businesses. In fact, you know, the business we run right now, we started in 07. We started it into one of the worst recessions in my lifetime, 07, 08 and beyond. In fact, we still haven't really recovered from that one. I like starting a business into a bad economy. It forces you to be better. So this business for me has been a little bit different. We've had plenty of work, lots of revenue opportunities. And honestly, this has been one of the businesses that I didn't spend a lot of time on cutting expenses because I had so many opportunities to bring in revenue. Well, now we're kind of maturing. The business has been around for coming up on 10 years now. And we're maturing and there aren't as many new opportunities for revenue. So now is the time for me to go back and start really cutting expenses. But that's unusual. Most businesses I've started, I focus early on really controlling expenses to generate more profit. So keep that in mind. Controlling expenses is always easier and you have more control. Controlling revenue is more difficult. It's harder to learn. You have to learn more about sales and negotiation, and those are more complicated than cutting expenses. You need to learn them, but I would focus first on cutting expenses. Now, if you're with a carrier and you're on a mileage contract, you don't even need to think about revenue. All you need to do is focus on cutting expenses. That's why we spend a lot of time talking about that. So we are, I'm going to get to some phone calls. I've got some other things I want to talk about. I think I'll do that as we go through the show. So let's see what it is you want to talk about today. Let's go to Kentucky. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call.
What can I help you with today?
Sure. I would just like to, first of all, thank you for what you do. I've been listening to you for about 6 months now, and you just put out a lot of great information, and I wanted to thank you for that. It's my first time calling in. I would like to get healthier is the reason for my call. Just maybe some quick history to give you an idea. I'm 48. I'm a little shy of 6 foot tall. My last weigh-in at my doctor was 335. And I, if I remember correctly, my body mass index, which I think is your fat percentage maybe, was I think 45 or 47 possibly. I called them to get some blood work results, and my glucose was 107. My cholesterol was 168. My triglycerides was 696. And I think that that was really concerning to my doctor. Now, just so you know, too, except for about the last 2 months, I have kind of wean myself off of about 2 months ago. I kind of weaned myself off of Fenofibrate, I think was the name of it, and simvastatin for my cholesterol and underactive thyroid. I take Celexa for, I guess you can say, depression and or anger, and have for quite some time. And I take another one that I'm sorry I can't think of the name of or probably even pronounce it, but it's a mixture of something and Prozac that acts as a mood stabilizer.
Got it.
But I just feel like crap. I mean, as far as not necessarily mentally all the time, but physically, I feel so much older than what I am. I've always been heavy in the sense of, I mean, like when I was late years of high school, all through my 20s and even early 30s, I've always been pretty stout and pretty fit and usually weighed about 215, 220, somewhere in that area. But over about the past 3 years is where I've really excessively gained a lot of weight. My diet, I'm sure, is not what it should be. Sometimes it's probably not that bad at all, and sometimes it's probably horrible. I mean, you know, when I'm home, which is generally once or twice through the week, and then on the weekend, you know, my wife and I might have steak, baked potato, and salad at a restaurant. But, you know, the next night it might be sushi. I've been trying to eat a lot of hard-boiled eggs and tuna and salmon just out of the foil patch that you can buy at the grocery store. I'm a smoker. I've given you quite a bit of an earful in a short period of time, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, and that's all good information. That's exactly, you know, what I want to hear when we're trying to, you know, work on getting healthier. I want to hear as much history as I can. So that's a good thing. So let's get to a break. I'm going to come back. I might have some more questions for you. But actually, I've got a very big question for you before we get to any of the other stuff. So stick around, and we'll be right back with more stuff. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Before the break, I was talking with Brian in Kentucky. So, Brian, there's no question you're dealing with a lot. The numbers, the cholesterol numbers that your doctor focused on tells me he's about a decade behind on cholesterol research. He's looking at two numbers that by themselves are meaningless. He gave you total cholesterol and triglycerides. Those two numbers don't tell us much. Now, the triglycerides tell us a little bit, and that is a bad number, but that can be fixed. The total cholesterol doesn't tell us anything, and we need to know HDL and LDL numbers. So if you could go back and get those numbers and we bring you back on another show, it might be helpful to know them, but honestly, it's not going to change my recommendations. So we don't really need to know them. The glucose 107, I'm assuming that was a fasting glucose test.
Yes.
Okay. And did they ever tell you what your A1C is?
No.
See, again, the fasting glucose is not a very good number for anything. A1C is a much better number. Some mornings I get up and my fasting glucose is high for some reason. Other mornings it's much lower. That can change a lot. The A1C gives us an average over 3 months. That tells us a much more accurate number. So that's something else. I would go back to your doctor and find out what the A1C number is. But again, not going to change any of my recommendations. You know, here's the interesting thing. We do a lot of these numbers. We do a lot of these tests. We look at them. But honestly, the recommendation's always the same. And for the most part, to solve 80% of the problems, we do all the same stuff. So I don't even need to know the numbers. Then after we do that major change and we get rid of about 80% of the problems, then actually it might be a little more important to look at the numbers and tweak and fix those last 10 or 20% of the problems. But here's the real question in all of this. You are currently going down the same path that most Americans are. You get less healthy every decade, don't you? And that is the pattern today. And are you ending up on more and more medications every decade?
It seems that way. One of the things that I wanted to mention to you that I forgot when I first got on. Now, when I told you there for a while, I was taking cholesterol medication and thyroid medication. Every 90 days, I would go back to the doctor for a follow-up. He would pull a blood test. And the results would not change. My thyroid would still be underactive and my cholesterol would still be. It's like medication was doing absolutely nothing.
It does do nothing. That's the whole point. And that's the problem with our system today. Medicine doesn't fix anything. We don't have any medications that actually fix things, with a couple exceptions. Antibiotics actually fix things. You have an infection, you take an antibiotic, it kills the infection. It also causes all kinds of other damage, but it actually fixes something. Virtually every other medication on the market it doesn't fix anything. All it does is cover up our symptoms. And then usually we keep it does more damage. And then we end up on another medication, and pretty soon we have a different symptom. And it's no wonder why by the time you get to your 60s, the average person today is on 7 or 8 prescription drugs. That's insanity. We shouldn't be on, any, really. So the decision here is, do you want to continue down the traditional path of eating pretty much the standard American diet, going to a doctor and having a doctor prescribe drugs that you will take the rest of your life and feeling like hell? And that's not going to get better. You can go to all the doctors in the world. None of these things are ever going to get any better. Many of them will just continue to get worse. Or you can decide, and this is kind of my question to you, do you believe and are you willing to believe and try the fact that every single symptom and problem you have is directly related to diet? And if that's the case, then it can be fixed with diet.
Yes. Do you believe? Certainly willing. Yes.
Okay.
I am.
Okay. And there's just overwhelming evidence to prove that. And as long as you believe that, then we're good. Then the goal becomes, start fixing your health problems with food and nutrition and start moving away from the drugs. Now, looking at some of these medications that you're on, I will tell you that the statin can go. You don't even need to wean yourself off of that. You can quit a statin today. There's no side effects to quitting a statin. All the effects of quitting a statin are good. The statin is not going to protect you from a heart attack. It's not going to save your life. It may lower your cholesterol numbers, but so what? It's just a number. It's kind of meaningless. The thyroid medication, it's not doing any good. Your thyroid isn't functioning properly because it's not getting the nutrition it needs. We can fix that with food. So you could quit the thyroid medication. The Celexa and some of the others, Those are a little trickier. I would probably want you working with somebody like a naturopath or an NTP and a naturopath. I mean, we can kind of help you on the NTP side, but those are a little trickier to get off of. But I will tell you, your goal needs to be to get off of those things. They are really bad for you in a lot of ways. But we have to manage that. And even the kind of stuff we're talking about, the symptoms like the anxiety, the depression, the anger, those are all diet related. They are 100% food related. There is nothing wrong with your brain. There is nothing wrong with the you know, we've always been told that those things are a chemical imbalance in the brain. Is true. But the chemical imbalance is not a disease. It's not because you're broken. It's because you're not feeding your body the nutrition it needs to make the right chemical messengers. That's it. It's just food. So, but getting off of those is a little trickier. So I don't want you to quit those. I mean, we need to create a more long-term plan for that. But the thyroid medication, the statins, I would just quit those. One of the things, if you want us to work with you, we can. I would need a complete list of your medications, dosages, you know, all of those things. But here's really step number one. The way to fix this, all of these things, is to start eating just real whole food. And I'm not even going to get much more complicated than that. A ketogenic diet would be excellent for you. That means high fat, moderate protein, low carb. But that even isn't even as important as just eating real food. Now, how do we define real food? The first way is real food doesn't have an ingredient list. If I eat a piece of beef, it's just beef. If there's anything else in it, I probably don't want it. I just want real food. A tomato doesn't have an ingredient list. Cabbage doesn't have an ingredient list. Things that grow in nature or are animals walking around. Now, our animals, we'd like them to be as healthy as possible. So we really don't want to eat a lot of factory farmed meat, which is all you're getting in restaurants and the grocery store. We need to go seek out, you know, healthier animals, grass-fed, pastured, organic. I realize that's hard on the road, so we're not going to get too crazy about that right now. But you have to start transitioning first off into eating real food as much as possible. That doesn't mean that starting right this minute, you never eat anything with an ingredient list again, but you need to move in that direction. More you move in that direction, the quicker you are going to see these issues resolve themselves. So right now, I don't want to overwhelm you with too much stuff about counting, you know, carbs and calories and fat and protein. And all I would say right now is, one, I would stop drinking anything except water, coffee, or tea. I wouldn't drink anything else. I wouldn't drink any sodas, no sports drinks, no juices. I don't care if it's a real fruit juice. I don't care if you squeeze the orange yourself. Don't drink that stuff. As far as liquids go, water, coffee, tea, and that means no sweeteners. So bulletproof coffee would be excellent. If you've heard us talk about bulletproof coffee, that would be a great thing to do. But I don't want to overcomplicate this right now. All I want you to do is start making that transition. Every time you go to eat something, think to yourself, is this real food or not? And if it's not real food, if you have the option of eating real food, I would. If you're in one of those positions, you're starving, there's nothing else available, sometimes you have to do it, but it should be your number one priority right now is just eat real food. And let's do that for a week. Let's get you back on the show next week on Destination Health on Wednesday. And let's not make any other changes right now. Drink water, coffee, or tea this week. Eat real food as much as possible. And let's talk again next week. I'm going to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get back to some phone calls. We are off to California. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
Paul, are you with me? Yep, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, I had a question about stress and weight loss. Can you, because I've been.
Paul?
With myself. Uh-oh. Am I still there?
There you go. You're there. Go ahead.
Okay. I would be ketogenic, you know, on and off, and then I put some weight back on and got very frustrated. So now I'm real serious back on it, and I'm doing everything I can to make sure I stay on it. And I've heard numerous times that when you're stressed, the stress does things in your body that if you're trying to lose weight, sometimes you can't lose weight because your body or you got stress in your life, and it does something that makes the weight loss more challenging. I wanted to kind of get your take on it as far as what it actually does and how to combat that. Because, like, for instance, this whole last week, even though I lost 5 pounds this last week, I used the breathalyzer to check my ketones. And this whole, since last Monday, I've checked my ketones at least 3 times a day, and only 3 times out of the whole week was I not in the red when it's blinking. I was in like full blown ketosis for the whole week, but yet I only lost 5 pounds, and I've lost more than that. And can you kind of give me a little insight on as far as what is it my body does when I'm stressed that affects the weight loss or affects the body in that way that you don't shed as much weight?
Yes, that's a really good question. And I'm going to do the best I can to explain this because it is really complicated, but we can simplify it somewhat. So the traditional belief about weight loss has always been calories in, calories out, and we should be able to measure exactly how much weight you gain or lose. We have believed that right. For 100 years, and it's going to be very, very difficult to change that belief, but it is completely wrong. We should just ignore calories. They have almost nothing to do with anything, because there is so many other things going on. See, we were treating our body like an engine. An engine, you could say, if you put in this much fuel, you can get out this much power. And that almost doesn't change ever. It's pretty standard. We can measure how much energy is in fuel and say we can get this much out. Well, we then believe that we could measure how much energy was in food and do the same thing with our body. Except our body isn't a machine that works the same every time. Our body is incredibly complicated. So the calories in, calories out theory is completely wrong, and we should get rid of it. There are so many other factors that determine what's going to happen with our weight. And one of the biggest is a whole group of hormones, insulin, leptin, ghrelin. There's all these hormones that can change lots of things that are going on in our body. Now, stress has a huge impact on all of those hormones, and those hormones control many, many functions in our body, including weight and all kinds of things. our stress response was designed as, and we've all heard this, the whole fight or flight. That is why we have stress response. Stress for a million years was immediate, and we knew what it was. We knew what caused the stress. You're walking across the savannah and a lion, you know, pops out of the bushes and is going to eat you. That's stress. And our stress response was designed to keep us alive in that situation. It's designed that there's a threat, we're about to die, and the threat response shuts down every system in our body that isn't necessary to live right this minute. So it shuts down digestion, it shuts down all of these functions, and it says there's only one thing important right now. We either need to fight or we need to flee. That's the fight or flight response that we hear about. So it shuts down everything. It cranks up our blood sugar. It tells our body, release sugar into the system right now, because that's our quickest source of energy. And we have to get through this. Now, this event should only last minutes, certainly not an hour, just minutes. We're either going to kill the lion or we're going to run away from it and we're going to try to save our life. Does that all make sense so far?
Yep.
So in those minutes, all kinds of crazy things happen in our body. Adrenaline is released. Hormones are released. Systems are shut down. And once it's over, minutes later, our body should go back to normal. And normal means our digestion is functioning, our blood sugar's under control, we're not overloading our body with adrenaline and all these other hormones. We're just functioning. The problem in our world today is our stress response is hyperactivated all the time. We feel that same fight or flight response because we're stuck in traffic. We feel it because we're stuck in traffic and the shipper is calling wondering why you haven't delivered the load yet. And your wife is calling saying the water heater broke. How come you're never home? And we could go on and on and on and on. Our life is stressful all the time. So people find themselves in this fight or flight mode literally every waking minute. And because of that, our hormones are so out of whack that it affects weight, it affects blood pressure, it affects blood sugar, it affects virtually every function. Digestion virtually shuts down. So we know that that affects weight loss or weight gain, but we don't really understand all of it because it's complicated, really complicated. But we know it's a factor. So the goal is then not even to try to necessarily understand it, but just to change the fact that we're always in that fight or flight mode. Once you start changing that, then everything in your body will work better and it will have an effect on weight loss or weight gain. So being in ketosis is good. Losing 5 pounds in a week isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, most people would love to be able to lose 5 pounds a week. So I'm not sure that I would worry too much about it.
Right.
But you can
right.
start working on that fight or flight mode. And there are lots of ways to do that. The first one is just to realize that you're in that mode. And one of the ways
right.
to do it is get somewhere quiet and start doing one of those exercises where you say, okay, I'm going to relax my head. I'm going to relax my face. And I'm going to relax my shoulders. And you'll realize how much tension you are carrying because when you relax, you feel that difference. And that difference means,
right.
oh, holy cow, I have been walking around in this stressful mode. So things like exercise are great for stress. Meditation is great for stress. And just sometimes realizing that you're stressed and saying, look, I'm going to take 2 minutes and I'm just going to breathe. I'm going to relax and I'm going to get rid of this stress response. And most of us walk around in that mode all day long. We don't even realize. So the first thing is just realize you're in that mode and start finding ways to get out of it once in a while. Stress is not a bad thing. Okay. Stress can help us make decisions. It can help us focus when we need to. But we can't be in that mode all the time. And our lifestyle has created that. So that's step number one. Just realize that you're in it most of the time and start working on ways to get out of it once in a while. That makes sense?
Right. Yeah, yeah. And I just kind of want to get your take on it, because I mean, I knew I was stressed this last week because of the way I had routed myself on my loads. I kind of put myself under the gun. And so I knew I was like kind of tense all week long. And I wondered if that was going to have an impact on my weight loss, because I knew I was through the roof on my ketones. And I thought, wow, I should have a huge week. And then when I didn't, I was like, well, it's got to be the stress.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You hit it on the head. You know you were more stressed this week. It affects everything. So the goal is work on lowering that stress every time you can. Sometimes we just can't. Life is stressful. We're going to face stressful situations, and that's not a bad thing. But we have to learn how to get out of that fight or flight mode. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rodman. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the final segment of this first hour. Let me take a look at questions right now. Questions are starting to come in a little heavier. We are going to do a second hour, but it looks like if you press one on your phone right now with a question, a comment, a topic about anything, I should be able to get to you in that second hour. So here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some of the phone calls. We're going to head off to Texas this time. Mike, welcome to the program. Mike, are you with me?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am indeed. Sorry about that. Yeah, Kevin, I'm developing over the last 6 weeks a problem with my transmission. I'm getting a scraping noise coming through it on the like 8th, 9th, and 10th gear. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions as to what I should do.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do have some suggestions. When it comes to transmission problems, there's several things. We have noises, we have, you know, transmissions that might pop out of gear, that might not, you know, split the gears properly, might not go from high range to low range the way it should. But what I've found on transmissions is trying to guess what's going on based on the symptoms is almost a waste of time, because in order to know what the problem is, we need to see inside the transmission, and then to fix it, we're obviously going to have to get inside the transmission. So the recommendation really is we just got to at least pop a cover off and look inside and see if we can see anything. The thing about transmissions, for the most part, it's purely mechanical. I mean, it's not like trying to troubleshoot a truck where we're, you know, worried about sensors and electronics and voltages and transmission for the most part, unless it's an automated, then we have electronics on top of the mechanical part. But for the most part, this is just mechanical. We need to get our eyeballs on the parts and see what's going on. How many miles are on it?
1.2.
Okay, so have you ever, how long have you owned the truck?
About 2 years.
So there is a good chance that the fluid, do you know if the fluid's ever been changed? Have you ever changed it?
Yes, I did it a couple of months back, yeah. And I didn't have any noise up till then. About a month after that, I started to hear a noise, but I guess that's just coincidence.
Maybe not. Sometimes it actually works this way, believe it or not. Sometimes. Now, my thought is there's a good chance that truck never had the fluid changed prior to when you did it. Now, ideally, I would have taken an oil sample when you changed that fluid. That would have told us a lot. But you could still take an oil sample now from that transmission, and we still may be able to pick up some clues about what went wrong. Sometimes when a component hasn't had the fluid changed and you get a lot of gunk build up inside, and sometimes the gunk is almost holding the thing together somewhat. And then you change the fluid and now the wear kind of reveals itself. You still need to change it because it was only going to get worse, but sometimes it's not a coincidence. Sometimes we do see a transmission like this. Somebody didn't change the fluid. It's all gunked up inside, but it seems to be working okay. Then you change the fluid and all of a sudden you start to get the symptoms. So it may not be a coincidence. I would take an oil sample and I would also just get somebody to pull the cover off this thing and look inside and see what we find.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I'll do that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And when you get that sample, give me a call back and you can order the sample from us if you want. And then it goes through our lab and we have access to the results and I'll take a look at it and we can see what might be going on. The sample will tell us a lot. Let's go to Florida. Rocky, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Got a question for you. Just got bile salts. I had my gallbladder took out 4 or 5 years ago. Just picked up my bile salts before I left the house about an hour ago and a probiotic. And on the probiotic, is that a, should I do that a once a day kind of deal, or is that a with meals? Is just the bile salts with the meals?
Bile salts with the meals, and you're going to kind of match the amount of bile salt you take to the amount of fat in the meal, because that's the whole purpose of the bile salt is to digest fat. So if you're only eating a little snack and maybe it doesn't have a lot of fat in it, you just take one. If you eat a big, heavy meal and it's pretty heavy in fat, you might take as many as four. You'll play around with the dosage on that and see what you feel better at. The probiotic is once a day. There doesn't seem to be much danger of taking too many probiotics. There's still a lot we don't know about this. We're not sure how much of the probiotic actually makes it through the stomach and into the intestines where we want it. So, if you take two a day, one a day, it's not really that critical. Taking them is a good thing. I think everybody should take a probiotic. It certainly can't hurt. But I wouldn't worry too much about that dosage. But there's still an argument about what's that?
There's a million of them on the shelves in these places.
Oh, I know. So here's what you're looking in a probiotic. First off, it should have multiple strains of bacteria. In my opinion, it should have more than five. And most of the stuff on the market doesn't. Most of the stuff on the market is one or two or three strains. I take a probiotic that has seven. And that's the one we carry. So that's number one. How many strains does it have? And we want as many as possible. Seven's a pretty good number, anything more than five. Then how many units does it have? How many of the live bacteria is in there? And it should be in the billions, tens of billions. The higher that number, the better. We're getting more of it. Then there's the quality issue, and this is the hardest one to figure out. How did they handle it? Is their bacteria still live and active or not? What is the coating? Because on a probiotic, we want it to make it through the stomach and not really be released until it's into our intestines, because our stomach acid is designed to kill bacteria. even good bacteria. It doesn't know the difference. So the probiotics are so popular. They're all over the place. I like sticking with the professional lines, the stuff that isn't sold in the retail stores. I think that's one way to get closer to a better quality. And then after that, you kind of just have to go by results. You know, if you take a certain probiotic, do you actually start feeling better? Does your digestion work better? If it does, that's a good sign. If you're taking it, you don't seem to notice much, maybe try a different brand. There's still an argument about, do we take probiotics away from food or do we take it with food? The argument is if you take it away from food, it's in the stomach on its own and there's more chance that the stomach acid's going to kill it. But then there's an argument if you take it with food that anytime there's food in your stomach, your body is going to release more stomach acid to help digest the food. And is that worse or not? Well, we don't know. We have no way to measure this in the body, or it's very difficult to measure in the body. I take my probiotics without food. My thought is, get it through the stomach as quick as possible. Don't put it in with a bunch of food so that the stomach's releasing a lot of stomach acid. But we don't know that for sure. So I take mine on an empty stomach once a day. And I usually take mine in the morning, which is my bulletproof coffee.
Okay. She recommended to me to take it at night with a glass of water.
And that's fine.
The one she recommended to me, I know it's 6 billion something, and a capsule wrapped, seaweed wrapped or something.
Okay.
She said it should make it through the stomach to the intestines. Okay. I guess it helps or something, but.
Yeah. Okay. And here's the thing, try it, and if it works, great. Stick with it. If you don't notice a major difference, then try another brand.
Okay. And then she talked me into doing I've heard you talk about it, the cider vinegar. Helping my blood pressure's been up just kind of on the border, even though I started the keto about 4 weeks ago, and still right up about 130 on the high side there, so.
Let me give you
down more regulated, and she said that would help.
Yeah, and the apple cider vinegar can't go wrong. It's got a ton of good benefits. Make sure it's raw and unfiltered. So you can't go buy Heinz clear apple cider vinegar on the shelf. That stuff does nothing. But the raw.
Yeah, it looks real cloudy in the bottle. You can't hardly see through it.
Perfect. Now, let me give you some encouragement on the blood pressure. I've been on the keto diet for coming up on 2 years, well over a year and a half. My blood pressure is still improving. So you do get some early benefits sometimes, but don't think that that's it, because my blood pressure didn't change for 6 months and then all of a sudden it started going lower again. Mine now is down around 110 over 70 and I feel amazing. So stick with it. It just keeps getting better. I've got to get out of here. We will see you next time. Be safe, be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to get to another show. So if you want to line up some questions, you might have a shot of getting through. In fact, if you press 1 on your phone right now, you will get through with a question, a comment, a topic, anything you've got. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll talk about it here on the air. You can also follow us a couple ways. Our website, again, letstruck.com. We've got all kinds of new and exciting things happening over there. Lots of great resources, and we're adding more. You can follow us on Facebook. You can look up my name on Facebook. You can look up Let's Truck. We have Destination Health. We have all of our podcasts. You can find those on our website under the Audio Road tab. And if you want to get on our email list, you can do that at the website, bottom left corner. You'll see a sign up there. You can also get on our text message list. And the way that works is anytime we are recording, anytime we're doing podcasts, any special events, we'll just shoot a quick text message to your phone. And if it's a recording or a podcast, we'll also send the number for you to dial in and listen. It's real simple, doesn't cost you anything. All you have to do is take out your phone. You can do it right now as you're listening to me. Take out your phone just like you were going to send a text message to anybody. Where you would normally put the phone number, you're going to put what's called a short code instead. So where you would put the phone number, you put 99000. 99,000, don't worry about the comma, just 99000. Or if you're in Canada, 76,000, 76000. That, wait about 30 seconds or less, you'll get a response back. It tells you you're on our list. And then when we're going to record, do a podcast, any of those things, we'll shoot you a quick text message. You can also stop it anytime you want. All you do is text the word stop back to that same number, and that'll take you off the list. You can put yourself on, take yourself off anytime you want. So you're in control, but it's a way to stay in touch with what we've got going on. I think what I'm going to do today is just get right to the phone calls because we've got a lot of questions. We're going to start off in Indiana. AJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey there. Hello. What's on your mind today?
I got a oil sample.
Okay, so I've got the sample here in front of me, but it's missing a bunch of information, so I need to ask you some questions. What year and what engine?
It's an 07 Series 60 14-liter engine.
Okay. And how many miles are on the engine, either since new or since an in-frame?
I bought a used engine. I think I talked to you about this. I had an engine problems, cross-contamination, and I had to junk that engine and put a different one engine in there. Bought it from... From a used engine place, it had 475,000. Is that what they told us? And I put in about 60,000 miles on top of it. So maybe 550, okay. Give or take.
Okay. And how many miles was on the oil when you took this sample?
20,000.
Okay. So this is actually a really good looking sample in most ways except one. I mean, normally when we see a level one, that's a good sample. We don't have to do anything at all. In this case, though, okay. Only one thing got flagged, and it only got flagged at a level one, but this is like one of my things. Your soot got flagged at 2.4. Now, that's that 14-liter, even though it's an emission engine, is still a fairly clean. The 07 wasn't bad. On this engine, I would like to see soot less than one. Yours is at 2.4.
Well, I think there was a my intake, the hose, the rubber hose cracked, was ripped. So I was driving just like that till I find out why I'm losing all this, you know, why am I blowing all this smoke out. And I replaced that like a day before I took that sample when I did an oil change. So I was driving with the rubber hose with an intake coming into the intake manifold out of the air charger.
Yes.
Is that what caused that?
Possibly. Since you've had this engine, has the overhead been set?
No.
Okay. I would set the overhead. One, because it hasn't been, so there's a good chance that it needs it. And two, that's usually when we see really high soot. And 2.4 for me is pretty darn high. That's usually an indication that the overhead's going to be out of adjustment. So you may have solved one problem that was adding to the soot, but I would run the overhead on this. I would wait another 20,000 miles, and then I would take another sample. But other than the soot, this looks really good. And soot is usually easy to fix. It just takes us time to work through some of the things that could cause it. So I wouldn't get worried about it. I think this is a good sample. I think it's a healthy engine. I think we just need to do a little tuning and tweaking and get that number down.
Wow. I mean, I've been changing oil for 15,000 miles, and I was trying to take a sample, and I didn't get that, you know, I didn't get around it to get that sample in, so that ran me over to 20,000 miles. So still with 20,000 miles, I think I'm still okay to change the oil to 20,000 miles.
Oh, yeah.
For now.
Oh yeah, this is a really, really clean sample other than the soot. And so far the soot isn't even really causing any problems. I mean, it made your viscosity go up a little bit, but yeah, I wouldn't worry about this. This seems to be a really clean burning engine. Little bit of tuning and tweaking and we will be fine. So get the overhead set, another 20,000 miles, 15 to 20, anywhere in there. Do another sample, call me back. And we'll see. Once you get the soot taken care of, you're good. There's nothing else wrong with this sample at all. Let's go to Utah. Sandy, welcome to the program. Sandy, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Kevin. Thank you.
There. You're welcome. What can I help you with today?
Well, I have a number of health issues, and I don't want to bore you with all of them today. I just thought that you could give me some resources as to more natural potassium. I have to take a potassium tablet along with a Lasix every day, and I'm just wanting to replace that tablet with a more natural, maybe food-related source for the potassium. Am I clear?
Yeah, no, very clear. Why was the potassium prescribed?
Because I take a Lasix, a water pill, every day.
Okay, got it. And is that for high blood pressure?
Well, not in the beginning. I've taken it for a long time, many years, and but my feet and ankles would swell real bad, and so that's was in the beginning. And go ahead.
Now, yeah, one of the things, my goal is always to get people off all drugs. I don't think we need drugs to be healthy. I mean, there are very, very few exceptions to that. We can be very, very healthy with no drugs and good nutrition. One of the things you might want to experiment with, because you've been taking that pill for so long, we have no idea what else might have changed. I start to wonder what would happen if you just quit taking it.
Yeah, I could do that.
Experiment, because this isn't anything that's life-threatening, or, you know, let's just see what would happen if you just stopped taking it. Maybe the symptoms won't come back at all. If they do come back, we could find a more natural way to work towards, but I would just try quitting it for a couple of days, see what happens. As far as the potassium, I will tell you, as much as I believe in getting all of our nutrition from food, there are some challenges because of our food supply. And minerals come from our food, but they ultimately have to come from the ground. That's where all minerals originate from. Either the plant that we eat is going to absorb those minerals, or the animal that we ate the plant and absorbed those minerals from the plant, and then we get it from that animal. That's where minerals come from. There's a problem, though, in that our soils are totally depleted of minerals these days. We don't farm the way we used to. Organic farming is different. Organic farming still has minerals in the soil because they can't depend on synthetic fertilizers. They have to use all the minerals. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford, talking with Sandy in Utah. So, Sandy, if you lived on an organic farm and you raised all your own vegetables organically and you raised all your own animals and you butchered them and you ate them, you would probably have no mineral deficiencies. But our food supply is kind of depleted. So we want to try to eat really good quality animals. We want to try to eat more organic vegetables, but it's a challenge. I work hard at it. And I am still mineral deficient. I test it all the time and I know. So there are a couple things, as much as I want to get everything I can from food, there are a couple things I supplement with. I use a product called Light Balance, and we actually carry it. You can get it from us now. We just started carrying it last week because I like it so much. It is just, it's a liquid, it's clear. It has almost no taste, a little salty. It actually tastes different depending on how your mineral balance is in your body. If you're really depleted of minerals, this will taste just like water. You won't taste it at all. If you have a good mineral balance in your body, it'll kind of taste salty and you won't want to drink it. And that's your body's way of telling you, do you need more of this or not? So I take a capful and I put it in my coffee in the morning, and I might take a capful later on and put it in water or whatever I'm drinking. Two capfuls a day, and my mineral balance stays good. The other food that is available that is really, really high in a lot of mineral content are seaweed and sea vegetable products, things like nori and dulse, and there's a couple others. We are going to start carrying these too. I found some snacks that are made from seaweed that actually taste really good, and they are loaded with minerals, sometimes 100 times more mineral content than a vegetable grown on land. So they have some other vegetables that are really hard to get, iodine and zinc and some other things. So I would recommend, supplementing with the Light Balance and trying some of these seaweed snacks and see if you like the taste of them. Between those two things, you can really keep your minerals up where they need to be.
Okay. Okay.
But I would try dropping diuretic for a couple days and see if the symptoms come back. If they come back to taking it, and long term, we could work on that. We could figure out why your body's retaining that water. It's going to be something dietary, and we could fix that. But short term, I would try it. Hello? Just see what happens.
Hello?
Yep.
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Are you
there? Did we lose you? Sandy, I think we lost you. So I would try that, and then call me back next week, and we'll see how things are going. Let's go to Oregon. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, last week on the show, we talked about getting a fleet filter for the, I have a 2010 Cascadia with the DD15 in it. I went ahead and ordered that fleet filter. It should be here by the end of this week. I was some are putting a fast fuel system on this truck, but with this three fuel filter system, the Cascadia has already run. Would it be worth it? And what happens to the three filters on the truck?
You can leave those on. And the reason you would go to the fast, and I would recommend it, is because the filters that are on that truck are good, really good at filtering for dirt and water. They both do dirt and water really well. What they don't do at all is get rid of any of the air that's in the fuel. And these new engines actually put more air back into the tank than they ever used to. It's the new high pressure rail systems actually create more what we call entrained air, air that's kind of stuck inside the fuel. And the new engines actually seem to respond better to the fast than the old engines did. It was great on the old engines. Seems to be even better on the new. And that seems to be why, because these new engines seem to trap even more air in the fuel. And those three filters do nothing to get that air out. The main purpose of the fast is good for filtering dirt, great for filtering water, but it's excellent at getting the air out of the fuel. And that's really why we want it.
Right, because right now I'm running at the mid 7.5, a little higher. And, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm going to gain out of the fleet filter. I'm assuming I'll gain something.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, too, is I strictly run in Oregon. I run Portland and Medford and back every day. And,
okay.
I don't know anybody. I knew a guy in California that did them, but I don't know anybody in Oregon that does a fast fuel system.
I would call Fast directly and check with them. They have installers all over the place. They can kind of point you to, you know, they'll have somebody out here that they work with. I, even though I'm here in the area, I haven't found a shop I'm all that wild about out here yet either. And the fast is a little more of a complicated install. You know, things like the OPS are pretty straightforward. And simple. The fast, I have seen people mess that one up. So I would call Fast and get a recommendation from them.
Okay. If I do have this done, do you recommend replacing all the fuel lines on the truck, or does that automatically get done when they put that system on?
No, it doesn't get done. How many miles are on it?
925,000.
Yeah, I would do it then. Whether they're rubber or the hard plastic, this is a great time to replace them all. I recommend doing it around 750. So at 900, clearly this is a great time to do it. And you have to specify that. There are some lines that will get added as part of the installation, but they won't replace them unless you request it.
Okay, well, that was pretty much it. I'm just, you know, I'm getting to where the truck's almost paid for, and I just want to invest a little bit more into it. My old samples that I have the shop do, they all come back really good, and it's just a good running truck, and I just want to make sure it stays that way. So, and if I can suck some more fuel mileage out of it, that's just money in the bank.
There you go. And the Fast has benefits beyond the fuel economy. It will improve fuel economy. It'll improve horsepower and performance, throttle response. But one of the really, really big benefits is it is good for your injectors. That air in the fuel is really hard on the injector tip. And when you keep the air out, the injectors last a lot longer. And that's important today because it's getting harder and harder to find good quality injectors. So we want to make our injectors last as long as we can. And the Fast is one of the best ways to do that. Let's go to Iowa. Tyler, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are we doing today?
Great. What's on your mind?
I had a question. I had a guy I know, swears up and down he found these pair of 07 trucks that he that he won't be required to run e-logs on. Is there anything to that? I mean, if a guy had like a salvage truck or something that he put, you know, I think he's thinking of emissions instead of that. I think he's, you know, found a couple of gliders that don't have to meet the emissions, but I didn't realize that the motor would have anything to do with e-log necessarily.
Well, here's the confusing thing, and I'm not going to be able to give you a definitive answer because every time I go to research this, my eyeballs start to bleed because I have to read government regulations. Logically, the e-log should be tied to the engine because the whole reason they have exempted 99 and earlier is because the ECMs aren't as sophisticated and they can't pull all the information that they need to. So they said, look, instead of trying to make this work on these older ECMs, we'll just exempt them. You know, it's a long time ago. There aren't that many trucks. Their thought is we'll eventually get rid of them anyway. But the way I'm reading the regulations, they tied the regulation to a certain VIN number, to one of the digits in the VIN number, which works until you get to gliders. Because the glider is going to have the new VIN number on the chassis. But hell, if I wanted to, I can put a mechanical engine in a glider.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is what happens if a guy did throw a mechanical motor inside of a glider? I mean, obviously you can't put an E-log in it then. It wouldn't, you know.
Exactly. That's why the regulation should be tied to the engine, not to the chassis. But the way I read it, they're tying it to the chassis. Now they're going to have to make an exception on gliders. If I put a 98 engine in that glider, then I should be exempt because my ECM is the problem. If I put a mechanical engine in that glider, they have to exempt me. I mean, there's nothing I can do. So I'm not real clear. I wish I could give you a better answer. I don't know what he's talking about. If he bought two gliders then I think, depending on what engine was put in those gliders. Now, if they put an 01 engine in the glider, then no, it's not going to be exempt at all. There'd be no reason for it to be exempt. The ECM will work, and it doesn't meet any of the criteria. My question, and I wish I knew the answer to it, is if I build a glider and put an older engine in it, a 96, 97, 98, I think I should be exempt from the E-log. But I don't know for sure. Maybe I'll put it back on my list and see if I can find that answer somewhere. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Robinson. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If somebody out there knows the answer, and I don't mean you heard it at the truck stop counter or somebody in your safety department told you, if you absolutely have it in writing and you can forward me the document that shows how to know this, how to know whether a truck is going to be exempt from e-logs or not. If you have it in writing somewhere, please send it to me, support@letstruck.com. But it doesn't do me any good if you say, well, my safety guy told me, well, this guy at the truck stop told me, or this DOT officer told me. That doesn't do me any good. I've heard all of that stuff. I want to see it in writing, and I don't have the patience to go find it in all of the government crap you got to dig through. So if somebody knows, send it to support@letstruck.com. That would be wonderful. If not, maybe I'll try to go look again, but I kind of doubt it because I have a ton of other things I'd rather be doing. Let's see. Let's head off to... Where are we going? We're going to head off to Texas. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yep, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if it was me or not. I have a try to make a quick question. I got a question about showers. I know that, you can get showers if you buy more than 50 gallons, but sometimes you go to some places and it's not available. You got to pay for them. That's tax deductible. I'm a company driver, so I go on like the 2106 unreimbursed employee business assistance, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So what about if you, but now, the other deal was physical fitness. If you health clubs and whatnot are not tax deductible, I understand. But what if you go to a gym and you buy a day pass for $10, which is about the cost of a shower at a lot of places? Is that tax deductible as a shower?
It would be in my book because I would never call it gym or anything else. I would say, look, I went there only to get a shower. I paid for the day pass. I went in and I took a shower, and that's it. So then clearly that's deductible because showers are, but you're right, the gym membership or a gym, you know, a day pass wouldn't be, but a shower is. And there's no way they can argue. Right? You bought it. They have a shower. You took a shower. That's what we're paying for. I would deduct all of them.
Okay. That's pretty much what I was thinking. It's just, but in my own mind, I want to at least bounce it off somebody else besides myself.
Yeah.
So,
no, I would absolutely deduct that. Yeah. And I don't care if I did go in and work out for 3 hours. If I took a shower, that's what I paid for. That's what I'm deducting.
Right. Exactly. They don't ask you if you're just going to walk on the treadmill for an hour or whatever you're going to do for an hour. You have full access to the facility for an hour to do whatever, or more than an hour, but just for whatever you want to do. Just as any member would.
Right.
So, okay.
Exactly. Yep.
Sounds cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to North Carolina. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I had a question about chewing gum and what you thought about, you know, whether or not I consistently chew to, more get rid of my oral fixation from quitting smoking. And then
okay.
I also, about 8 months ago, I was in an accident and broke my leg in two different spots and also had some dermal and subdermal damage to my lower leg. I just had a question on whether or not you knew what kind of effect that has on digestion and just my general eating habits. And I've been grain-free for about 3 months. And prior to the accident, I had been grain-free for about 2 months.
Okay. And how is that working? Do you feel better?
It was great. Before the accident, I was about 338 pounds. I'm about 6'3", 6'4". I had actually gotten down to about 296 pounds before the accident. But believe it or not, in a hospital setting and in a rehab setting, it was really hard to find anything that didn't have, you know, that they served that didn't have grains in them. But this time around, I feel great because I've actually adapted a lot of more whole foods, grass-fed beef and such.
Good, good. You're right. Being in the hospital or rehab centers, the food is horrible. I mean, the place where we should go to be healthier, their food choices are horrible. So no big surprise there. Chewing gum. This is interesting, and I haven't been able to find any real research on this. So we're kind of speculating, but we do know that chewing, the physical act of chewing, does more than just break down our food. It signals our body for a lot of other things. It when we chew, our body is expecting that food is about to enter the stomach. So the physical act of chewing actually starts releasing chemicals. It releases, I just drew a blank on the word that I'm looking for, enzymes. It releases enzymes in your mouth that start breaking down carbohydrates immediately. And it also signals the stomach that food should be on its way. So it starts releasing hydrochloric acid, stomach acid. So the speculation is, if every time we chew gum, if all that's going on, is that necessary? Is it? I don't think it's hurting anything. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. There's not a lot of research on this, but there doesn't seem to be any huge negative consequences. Do you suffer from anything like heartburn or acid reflux? Or?
No, not really. Actually, that's what I used to every once in a while, but since I started eating right, or at least attempting to eat right, it's gotten, I never have it anymore. But
yeah.
With my other question, I had gained a lot of that weight back from being immobile, and I'm not losing it as quick as I did before.
You know, that seems to be a pattern, and I'm not, again, not a lot of research on this. There's a lot of conflicting theories. The ketogenic diet works absolutely amazing. But sometimes when people have a rebound, and normally the only reason they rebound is because they got off of the ketogenic diet. You didn't have much choice. You were stuck in a place where you couldn't eat that way. It does seem to be more difficult the second time. And there are some theories, but we're not really clear on why that happens. There's the theory that your body kind of has a set point, almost like a thermostat for weight, that's kind of hard to overcome. But what we do know is, even if it's a little more difficult the second time or the third or the fourth, that a ketogenic diet still works better than anything else, mostly because it controls your hunger and makes it easier to do. So I would keep doing what you're doing. I wouldn't worry about the gum chewing. I don't think that's a big problem. And keep doing the grain-free. Go maybe even deeper into not just grain-free, but into a true ketogenic diet. And I would even measure ketones and see what happens with the weight loss. If it totally stalls, then call me back and we'll work through some other options. And we may have to do some other testing and look at a couple other things. But I would just stick with what you're doing, and maybe even take it a little further and go not just grain-free, but high fat, low carb, watch the protein, and try to get the best quality food you can. I know that's difficult on the road. And then let's see what happens. Give it a week or two. See if anything starts moving again on the weight loss. And if it does, keep doing it. If it doesn't, call me back and we'll start looking at the next couple things that could be causing that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. It's kind of interesting that this is fun for me, the whole health side, because a lot of the same skills I've developed over the years, decades now, in troubleshooting trucks. So I say all the time, there just aren't a lot of people good at troubleshooting anymore. Too many mechanics have been taught to just rely on codes, rely on the computer, and they don't seem to develop those troubleshooting skills. I grew up working on things. At 6 and 7 years old, I started racing motorcycles. By the time I was 9, I was able to take a carburetor apart and clean it and put it back together. But I've done that most of my life. So you develop good troubleshooting skills. It's interesting for me now, some of those same ideas and techniques and skills work at troubleshooting bodies. You do it in steps. You try the easiest, most logical thing. If it works, keep doing it. If it doesn't, you move on to the next step. It's kind of fun. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, so here's where we are. We have one more segment to record. I have lots of calls on the lines. I just don't have any questions right now. So I'm going to give it about 30 seconds. I usually need two questions to get through a segment. If you have a question, a comment, a topic, press one on your phone right now. If I get at least two of them, I'll go ahead and record another segment. If we don't get any, then we'll call it a day. So I'll give you, there's one. Room for one more. There's two. Okay. We'll go ahead and record another segment. If you want to press one on your phone, I might get to three. Depends on how long these take. But usually with two, I can get through a segment. But if you want to jump in, go ahead and press one, and I'll see if maybe I can get to three. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. So I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Just a quick the topic I kind of wrapped up with there, the troubleshooting. I'm really finding that a lot of my troubleshooting skills are working really well on the health side, on the NTP side. I use some of those same processes of identifying what the most likely problem is, then making a list of what kinds of things could cause that problem, then prioritizing that list into the things that are the easiest and cheapest to test. And then you test things. Did this help? Did it make things worse? Did it make things better? Then you move on. In troubleshooting a body in many, many ways is a lot like troubleshooting a truck, just more complicated. There's a lot more variables, but the same processes work really well. Let's go to Oklahoma. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the keto diet. I'm already out on the road. I didn't plan ahead or anything. But if I stop tonight, say at McDonald's, and I get like a double quarter, and I don't eat the bread, would that be a good option?
It's an option, and it would be ketogenic if you took the bread away from that burger. Everything left on it is pretty ketogenic. It's really poor quality. That's
right.
So in an emergency, I'll eat that guy. You would be better off, instead of McDonald's, finding even kind of a medium grade chain restaurant. The meat quality is going to be a little better. But in an emergency, that is ketogenic. Yes. Some issues. It's not going to make us healthy long term, but it's ketogenic. So if our original goal is one, getting rid of grains, getting our carbs down low, losing weight, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's a good meat. Now, let me tell you a way to make it a little better. This is one of I just did this again last night. This is a really common thing for me when I eat out. No matter what kind of a restaurant I'm in, virtually every restaurant has a burger or two or three or 10, you know, with different stuff on them. And almost every restaurant has a couple different salad options. So what I'll do is I'll order the burger with no bun, and I'll order a salad, and I'll put the burger on the salad. That's a really satisfying meal. You get the crunch, you get the freshness, you get some of the fat. And I usually make my own dressing and carry it with me because the salad dressings are garbage. But you get more nutrients. You get the fiber. You get the phytonutrients, the minerals. So that's a really good way to eat. I ate out last night, and that's what I did. I had ordered their burger, and I ordered a salad. And you just eat the burger on the salad. And it's really, really good. In fact, I like it way better than a burger on a bun. So that is the way you described it. It's ketogenic, and it's a good start. Then when we can, we want to try to get better quality as well.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Texas this time. Justin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Quick mention on that on the double quarter. I would have them leave off the ketchup, too. That stuff's just sugar. But on the condiment topic, I've got a question about mustard.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm trying to go grain-free as much so as I can, and I love mustard, and I'm curious, is that a grain or a seed? I tried Googling it, and I get 12 different answers.
No, it's a seed. Now, the confusion comes in because you can buy whole grain mustard. That's a
right.
misnomer. You could actually call it whole seed mustard because no grain, no proteins to worry about in there that are going to wreak havoc on our system. Actually, mustard is a really healthy condiment. The mustard
Fantastic.
Seed has some phytonutrients in it, and most mustard is made with turmeric. And turmeric is actually one of those really powerful spices that we should try to eat more of. You know, it's kind of funny because I will eat almost anything. And I mean that. I have found almost no foods that I don't like, as long as they're made well, that kind of stuff. But I mean, I will eat weird stuff. I'll eat any animal you put in front of me. I am not a picky eater. I used to be. I'm not anymore. I eat almost anything. There's one food that I just don't like. I mean, it repulses me. And it's any Indian curry. Now, I like Thai curries. There are some curries I really like. But an Indian curry turns my stomach, just the smell of it. And I thought, what is it? Because curry is just a mix of a bunch of stuff. Well, it turns out it's the turmeric. Most Indian curries are loaded with turmeric, and I just can't handle that stuff. It makes me ill. And it's unfortunate because turmeric is a really beneficial spice. But turmeric is used in mustard, and in mustard, I don't taste it.
Fair enough. Awesome. Well, you made me super happy. I was kind of upset that I was ruining the whole grain-free thing by using my Coleman's mustard. But
not at all.
Thank you very much for your time, sir.
You're welcome. Mustard is a great condiment. Let's go to Rulon in Tennessee. It's your turn.
Yes, I was wondering what is the first thing I should do for fuel economy driving around town in a straight truck?
Tell me a little bit about the engine.
It's a 5.9 Cummins with a 5-speed Eaton and a 390 Meritor rear end.
Okay. So the reason I ask is because my first fuel mileage upgrade is always the Scan Gauge KR because it's pretty inexpensive, easy to install, and it teaches you how to drive better. Unfortunately, it doesn't work on that engine. Now, you can get, not from us, but you can go right to the company that manufactures our scan gauge for us, and they make a scan gauge for that truck. It's just not our model. So it's not going to have some of the features we've programmed into ours, but it's still going to help you learn how to drive that truck better. So I would recommend a scan gauge. You just can't get the Scan Gauge KR. So just go Google Scan Gauge there, and they actually... they're in some of the bigger auto parts stores. I forget which one. So you can probably get it locally. I would recommend that first. That's a really good way to teach you how to drive for better fuel economy. The next thing, what size wheels and tires?
They're 22 and a half rims. I was thinking of getting low profiles.
Good. So with the 22 and a half, we can go look up the rolling resistance because Michelin has all those. Low rolling resistant tires are going to be a huge benefit for you, even more so than the people who drive over the road. When you drive over the road, the first factor, the biggest factor in fuel economy is aerodynamics. The second factor is rolling resistance. When you drive in the city, rolling resistance becomes the most important factor in fuel economy. So getting a good low rolling resistant tire all the way around that truck is going to be a big benefit. The next thing I would do, and I would look at a tuner from Banks Diesel. Banks Diesel is kind of like the Pittsburgh Power of the smaller diesel engines. They do all the same kind of stuff. They have a lot of performance and fuel mileage products, but a tuner on that engine can make a huge difference.
All right.
So that should keep you busy for a couple months between those several ideas. Get started with those. Scan gauge, just not the scan gauge KR. It's not going to work on that truck. You need the standard scan gauge. Trying to remember the connector that I'm just drawing a blank. But if you go to ScanGauge's website, or they'll be able to tell you which one you need for that vehicle. It's just not the ScanGauge KR. And low rolling resistant tires, and then look at some of the tuners. And I would stick with Banks Performance Diesel on that one. And you can make significant differences in fuel economy on this engine. I'm talking about on that truck and that engine, we could shoot for a goal of adding 5 miles to the gallon. That's not out of the question on that truck. There's the music. That means I'm all out of time. We'll get to more of your calls and questions on the next show, because when they say I've got to go, I've got to go. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford, thanks everyone. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Power Hour and General Questions.